Well, hello there, my friends, and welcome. My name is Stephanie Safarian, and you're listening to Sustainable Minimalists. This is a listener-supported show all about intentional and eco-friendly minimalist living. On today's show, we are discussing what I believe needs to happen on the cultural level in order to combat the climate crisis. And more specifically, I'm suggesting one new thing you can do this Earth Day. Yes, it's coming up, but frankly, every darn day. And the one new thing I'm discussing today, it's not going to be something you expect me to suggest. It's not going to be anything you hear on those top 10 Earth Day action item lists that you see online. So we'll get to that in a minute, but let's talk about Earth Month. We are well into Earth Month, and next week is Earth Day. Earth Day was established in 1970 because people organized and galvanized. They were outraged that toxic chemicals were polluting our planet. They were outraged that factories could spew black clouds of toxic smoke into the air and also at the same time dump tons of toxic waste into nearby waterways without being held accountable. And so that was 1970, right? But these days, Earth Day has just morphed into this cutesy day that essentially means nothing. You're going to be seeing a lot of Earth Day content out there if you haven't already started seeing it. Have you gotten a 20% off for Earth Day email yet? I have. I will keep the name of that brand to myself. Or how about my favorite? What about all those top 10 favorite Earth Day products lists that are going to be popping up online filled with affiliate links on social media? What a joke. Earth Day, like almost every other holiday special day, it has, and I'm sad to say it, but it's true, it's become yet another excuse for companies to push things we may not want and most certainly do not need. And so for all the Earth Day chatter that's either out there now or will be starting in the next day or so, for the content that's not centered around getting you to buy something, you'll likely hear all of the same recycled, played out suggestions like plant a tree, do a park cleanup, do a beach cleanup. You'll also likely be reminded to practice Earth Day every day by filling your dishwasher to capacity before running it, or hang drying your clothes, or composting, or installing LED bulbs. You know the drill. We've done this all before. Heck, I've frankly done it all before. The problem is this advice is stale, and worse, it's not working. Last year was the hottest year on record. So all this stale advice, it's not solving the problem. So this year, in honor of Earth Day, here on Sustainable Minimalists, we're doing something different. And more specifically, I am suggesting one, just one action item that you've likely never heard before for this Earth Day, but really for always. So if you're listening to this episode and you're like, oh, it's an Earth Day episode, I don't need to listen. No, you definitely still need to stick around. Now let's talk about my big five for a minute. For my OG longtime listeners, you likely remember me talking about the big four. The big four has now morphed into the big five for me. So it used to be the four most impactful, most influential actions that you could take to lower your carbon footprint. It is now morphed into the big five. The big five, of course, if you really want to get serious about your pro-environmental behaviors, you're going to focus on these five things. Number one, you're going to buy less stuff. Buy less new stuff, I should say. Number two, you're going to work on your transportation. You're going to fly less, significantly less, and you're going to use your car a lot less too. Yes, I know. It's serious stuff. It's much more significant than installing LED bulbs, right? Number three, you're going to zero in on how you heat and cool your home. You're going to do heating and cooling more efficiently. That's number three. Number four, you know I'm going to say it, you're going to change your diet to mostly, if not fully, plant-based. I know, big sacrifices. And then number five, so those are the big four. Now the big five, I added this one on, it is to practice activism. to get out of your home, use your voice, use your God-given talents, and help the environmental movement. So that's the big five. I'm going to refer to the big five throughout today's show, but let's just remind ourselves one more time. Number one, buy less. Number two, transportation, fly and drive less. Number three, heat and cool your home more efficiently. Number four, eat plant-based. And number five, be active, practice activism, join an environmental movement, and be loud and proud about it. All right. So I always suggest to people, if you want to get the biggest environmental bang for your buck, you focus on these five things. But I'm not suggesting these five tips today. What I am suggesting today, now are you ready? Hold on to your hats. My one and only one action step for all of you today is to practice communal care. Communal care, also known as community care. What on earth is that? Well, communal care was popularized a few years ago by Nikita Valerio. She's a community organizer and a researcher. Community care is what happens when small-scale and large-scale actions are happening simultaneously to show that we care about other people and other things beyond ourselves. I will use the terms community care and communal care interchangeably today, but community care, communal care, whatever we're calling it, it's about taking the initiative to show and give compassion to others, other people, other things. Not just doing it once in a while when it's convenient, not just doing it on Earth Day because it's Earth Day, doing it every single day. Now, I know what you're probably thinking. You're thinking, what is Stephanie talking about? She's gone off the deep end. Communal care has nothing to do with the planet. Well, back up. Stay with me because I'm standing by what I said. Communal care has everything to do with the planet's health, and I'm going to try to prove it today. I've got three reasons to you. So reason number one, why I believe, yes, the big five's important, but it's not the most important. The most important is communal care. Reason number one, why I believe communal care is most important this Earth Day and every day, is communal care, by its very nature, cannot be monetized. Let's talk about the opposite of communal care for a moment. It's self-care. You know it's true. According to the WHO, World Health Organization, self-care is what people do for themselves to establish and maintain mental health and to prevent and deal with illness. You know it's true because you live in 2024. Self-care has become easily monetizable, easily marketable, but communal care, it's not. We have these cultural myths from our individualist culture. And we're going to talk about individualism in a minute. But we have these cultural myths, thanks to our individualist culture, about how we should be able to make it on our own. And this is precisely why the hashtag self-care movement is so popular, right? We are taking care of ourselves first and foremost, because by and large, our individualist culture teaches us that we cannot reliably rely on others. And guess what? Brands, marketers, they know how to capitalize on all of that, right? Self-care is incredibly lucrative for lifestyle brands. Let's talk about Goop. We all know Gwyneth Paltrow, right? Goop is one of the biggest lifestyle brands that trades heavily in the self-care and wellness market, sells super trendy self-care products like $190 aromatherapy stone diffusers. Yes, that's true. It's straight from the website. Goop, I believe, is now worth over $250 million. So there's money to be made in the self-care movement. But guess what? There's $0 to be made in the communal care movement. Companies just simply can't make money from community care the way they do from the self-care industrial complex. How do you monetize a friend who comes over to do your laundry after your first round of chemo and you're too sick to get up? How do you monetize that? You can't. You don't. How does someone make a dollar off of you or your neighbor when, if your neighbor needs a tennis racket for tennis season, you let them borrow yours that's collecting dust in the garage? There's no financial transaction happening in communal care, and that's why communal care is largely anti-capitalist. Community care works outside the capitalist system. So if you don't believe me, here's some more examples. Let's say your friend just fell and broke his leg. Your friend group all mobilized and each decided to bring a meal to your friend 3 days a week for the next 6 weeks. Your friend who broke their leg, they won't need to order DoorDash. Their need for DoorDash or for takeout greatly diminishes, right? How about this one? Let's say you need someone to watch your child for a few hours so you can finish working on that big presentation you have for work. Well, if your sister-in-law watches your toddler for a few hours, you can get your work done and you won't have to buy that $4.99 movie off of Amazon to entertain your toddler while you are trying to work. There's no financial transaction in communal care. And one more example before we move on, I'm really beating a dead horse, but don't forget your buy nothing groups. If you need something and someone in your community freely gifts that item that you need, there's no financial transaction. It's also a beautiful example of communal care. Communal care lies outside the grasp of capitalism. Prioritizing communal care means that by default, we're buying less stuff and services. And buying less is one of the big five. So by prioritizing communal care, we're already, without even really trying, doing something big with regard to the big five. Now, I also talk an awful lot on this show about convenience culture. We talk a lot about the consequences specifically of convenience culture on the planet. Convenience culture, of course, refers to how modern society is increasingly geared towards ease and instant gratification. It has its origins in the post-World War II era. But what is convenience culture at the end of the day? Convenience culture, in which we're buying the more expensive and very often planet-harming products and services because they are, well, convenient. Convenience culture has essentially become so popular precisely because so many of us lack the strong social support systems. We're lacking in communal care. So the microwavable meals, the fast food restaurants, the grocery delivery, the laundering services, I could go on and on. All these convenient options and more could be rendered unnecessary if only we had strong social ties, not just in times of crisis or emergency, but all the time. Let's not forget, too, that convenience culture and social isolation, they're in a feedback loop, aren't they? In today's culture of convenience, it's easy to go for hours or even days. How about a week without speaking to another human? Studies, of course, have shown that loneliness can lead to mental health issues like anxiety, depression. And so as our lives become more and more convenient, it's essential to make an effort to connect with others in person, because otherwise we're in that loop. We rely on products of convenience. We see less people. We have less of a community. Enter more products of convenience. So what am I trying to say here? This is the TLDR of the show. When communal care is practiced on the large scale, one of our big five issues, which of course is to buy less, gets easily taken care of. We have less of a need for products and services of convenience when the people in our lives are stepping up to help. And the people in your life, they will also have less of a need to buy stuff when they have you to rely on. All right, so that's my first example. This episode is essentially a five-paragraph essay. I'm bringing you back to eighth grade English language arts. Five-paragraph essay. We got an intro. We've got three paragraphs. Each one is one example to support the thesis statement, and then we've got a conclusion. So we've done our intro. We've done paragraph one of our body. Now we're on to paragraph two, my second reasoning for why communal care is the answer. That, of course, is the thesis, is that our cultural emphasis on individualism can be planet-harming. And what, of course, is the antidote to individualist culture? It's communal care. You know it's true. Surprise to no one, right? The United States is largely an individualistic culture. Whereas collectivist cultures emphasize needs and goals of the group as a whole, in individualistic cultures, personal needs take precedence. I'm going to say that another way. In collectivist cultures, relationships with other members of the group and the interconnectedness between people play a central role in a person's identity. Relationships are seen as stable and permanent. But in individualistic cultures, relationships are often viewed as voluntary. They're not necessary, right? We don't need them to survive because we have ourselves. Citizens of a collectivist culture might strive to sacrifice their happiness for the greater good of the group, but those from individualistic cultures, they may feel that their own well-being and goals carry greater weight. I want to be clear that individualism, individualist cultures, that doesn't equate to selfishness. It's not that black and white, right? Individualist cultures just see an individual as an individual first and not as a member of a group. That's the difference. But it can be selfish if we take it too far, and we're going to get there in a minute. Countries in Asia, specifically East Asia, as well as countries in South America, tend to lean more collectivist. I did read that up to 70% of the planet is collectivist. I'm not sure if that number is accurate, but if it is accurate, we Americans are certainly operating in a vacuum, aren't we? So what does collectivism say about pro-environmental behaviors? Well, it turns out that collectivism and pro-environmental behaviors are highly correlated in the research. Not surprising, right? Research has found that places with a stronger collectivism culture, they tend to make more green investments in the community. It has also been reported that collectivism significantly impacts on the individual level, both green purchase intentions and behaviors. So individualists place less emphasis on recycling, let's say, whereas collectivists exhibit more eco-friendly actions. This has been studied. Another factor here too, of course, is materialism. Materialism in the context of science, like how is it defined? So how can we measure and study it? Materialism is defined as the importance placed on material goods. And of course, while materialism can promote excessive, unnecessary consumption, materialism-driven consumption may adversely affect the environment. Yes, of course. Highly materialistic consumers tend to have low environmental awareness. And guess what? A 2023 study surveyed 472 adults, age 20 to 69, by the way. And this study found that those who had a higher collectivist mindset displayed lower levels of materialism. Think about that for a minute. They were also more willing to pay a little bit more of their own money for environmental protection. Wow. Wow. Now, what about here in the U.S.? We are a melting pot, right? We have an umbrella culture, but we are a melting pot. We have a large Latinx population in particular. And I did just mention that South American cultures in particular tend to sway collectivist. Well, guess what? The Latinx community here in the United States, they often report higher levels of environmental concern, and they often come out and show support for climate change policy and initiatives to address local environmental problems more often as relative to other racial ethnic groups. Holy moly! Research suggests that a potential reason for their pro-environmental behaviors is due to their culture's emphasis on collectivism. And I just want to say here too, before we take our ad break, that sadly, an individualistic culture perpetuates itself. People don't always know how to support each other during hard times because we're told in an individualistic culture that we need to deal with our problems all by ourselves. So ultimately, the power, the initiative to care for ourselves, if it's our responsibility, that means we're then going to double down on self-care. We take care of ourselves first because no one else is stepping up to help us in times of need and always. And simultaneously, we don't have the skills. We don't have the verbiage to ask for the help we need. So self-care becomes tantamount, and caring for the collective comes second, if it comes at all. All right. So we are going to take our ad break, and then when we come back, we're going to get into paragraph 4 of my 5-paragraph essay. I'll see you in a minute. Mother's Day is around the corner, and I have the best gift idea for you. Hold on to your hats. It's mylifeinabook.com. Every week, My Life in a Book will send your mom a question via email. They will compile all of your mom or the mom in your life's answers and create a legacy keepsake book. The book becomes something you and future generations can treasure forever. I gave both my mother and my mother-in-law My Life in a Book, and they've already started responding to the prompts. When my mother-in-law received her first prompt, she said, "Oh my goodness, what a thoughtful gift." And that's what we all want, right? We all want to give thoughtful gifts. So check out mylifeinabook.com and use code SUSTAINABLE at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day, mylifeinabook.com, and use code SUSTAINABLE for 10% off today. Nothing nurtures the world above better than the soil below, and that's why I am so excited to introduce you to Coast of Maine. Coast of Maine is an organic soil brand that offers a full range of products designed to cover all of your garden and lawn needs. In years past, my vegetable garden, I neglected the soil and I didn't have much yield. If your soil lacks appropriate nutrients for success, your garden may not succeed. And so this year, I am so excited to cultivate the soil before planting the plants with Coast of Maine's organic products. Coast of Maine believes in nurturing relationships with local retailers. So next time you're at your local retailer, look for Coast of Maine products. Get growing. Visit coastofmaine.com to find a local retailer near you. coastofmaine.com. If you've been paying attention, you've likely heard something about gut health and why zoning in on your gut health is so darn important. You need EQ's Daily Women's Microbiome Defense. It's a 3-in-1 capsule that supports your digestive health and promotes gut barrier protection. I started taking EQ's Daily Women's Microbiome Defense because I have a bloating problem, friends. Yes, I do. Inflammation is not my friend. Since taking one capsule a day on an empty stomach with water, I have noticed more energy, improved skin, and here's the big one, reduced bloating. Head to myeq.com and use code SUSTAINABLE for 15% off Equilibria's microbiome defense and so much more. That's myeq.com and use code SUSTAINABLE at checkout for 15% off site-wide today. And we're back. On today's show, we're discussing the number one thing that I'm frankly going to be working on this Earth Day, this Earth Month, this year, and always. And that, of course, is to practice communal care. Now, the reasons why I think communal care is so darn important, not just for our own personal health and well-being, but also for the health and well-being of the planet, is, of course, in my 5-paragraph essay, my oral essay, I should say. My first reason why communal care is important to the planet is, of course, that communal care, by its very nature, cannot be monetized. That's reason number one. Reason number two that we talked about before the break, of course, is that while a cultural emphasis on individualism can sometimes be planet-harming, communal care is the antidote to that harm. And now we're on to my third and final reason, which, of course, is my belief that our environmental problems is due at its root. So like if we were to take out the diseased plant in the ground and examine the roots, I believe what we would find, the problem, is disconnection. Because when we're disconnected, we don't care. And if we don't care, we're not going to galvanize to do the big five. So let's back up. Stay with me. I'm going to bring it all together and I'm going to wrap it up in a big red bow. I have been musing for a while on the root of all of our environmental problems. Is it capitalism's fault? Is it our emphasis on individualism that's the problem? Is it just the laziness of human beings and our subsequent desire for convenience at all costs? Like, what is the root of the problem? Because at least on an individual level, we know what we need to do, right? We have to do the big five. The systemic issues, they are for our elected leaders to get a handle on and solve. And it, of course, is on us to put pressure on them. But the individual actions that we all need to take, we know what they are. They're the big five. We know what actions will make the biggest individual impacts. And if we're all doing the big five, collectively, we're going to have an oversized impact, right? So here's the question. Why aren't we all doing them? Why aren't we doing them? I'm willing to bet that if I polled all 10,000 of you listening right now, only a fraction of you would say you're vegan. If I polled you all again and asked you how many of you took an overseas flight in the last year, many of you would say you have. And so I'm not saying this to point fingers because guess what? I went overseas last year and guess what? I'm still not vegan. I'll be upfront with you. I do my best, but I'm not perfect. And so the question I'm seeking to get an answer to is why am I? Why are perhaps you? Why are we as a globe, as humanity, as a species, why are we not regularly participating in the big five? I believe the reason is that we are disconnected. We're disconnected from each other. We're disconnected to the natural world. And now we are seeing the consequences of such disconnection playing out in front of us. Certainly, chasing money at all costs, thanks to capitalism, certainly that plays a role. Certainly, our emphasis, our cultural emphasis on what's good for the individual is more important than what's good for the group. Certainly, that's a factor. And yes, certainly the laziness that plagues our species, plagues Homo sapiens, certainly that has also contributed to the rise of our wanton wastefulness. Absolutely. But what is the root cause? Again, I believe that the root cause is our deep disconnect from other people and other things. Because when we see ourselves firstly as one person instead of a member of a group, it becomes easier to forget that we actually are a member of a group. We are members of a very important group. We are all humans that have to figure out how to live harmoniously on this planet together. As humans, we are part of this intricate and delicate earthly ecosystem. We're going to talk about the ecosystem in a minute. But let's talk about the two major ways we are disconnected. Number one, we are disconnected from other people. In 1985, the General Social Survey collected the first nationally representative data about whom Americans discuss important matters with. In 2004, so 19 years later, they replicated the questions and redid the study. Okay. The goal was to assess social change in core network structures. Guess what they found? Discussion networks were significantly smaller in 2004 than they were in 1985. The number of people saying that there is no one, not a single person, with whom they discuss important matters nearly tripled in just 19 years. Those who did report having strong ties in 2004 said that they have strong familial ties, so they have ties with their spouse and their parents, perhaps. but they had fewer, if any, contacts through voluntary associations. That's like friends. That's like community relationships, right? You can't run from your family. Those aren't voluntary connections necessarily. But all the other ones, the friends, the community, the neighborhood, those are voluntary. And in 2004, people had significantly less of those voluntary connections than in 1985. This is all, of course, I know 2004 was 20 years ago, so it's dated research. However, I do want to say that this research is consistent with more recent research on the topic of close ties. People have been surveyed every several years about how many close friends they have. And increasingly, it's gone down and down and down. Now the average is less than one close friend, which means that many people have zero very close friends. So I just made the point, like mic drop moment. We are disconnected by and large from other people. Now, I know you might be saying, I have lots of friends. Well, I'm talking collectively, right? As a collective, we are disconnected from other people. We are also disconnected from the planet. Obviously, I shouldn't even have to go into this. However, I will. One study, I believe it was published in 2015, found that people who walked for 90 minutes in a natural area, as opposed to walking in a high-trafficked urban setting. So people who walk for 90 minutes in a natural area, the woods, the beach, a quiet area, they showed decreased activity in a region of the brain associated with a key factor in depression. So connection with nature, that's an antidote to depression. Did you know that? In fact, let's take this one step further. City dwellers have a 20% higher risk of anxiety and a 40% higher risk of a mood disorder as compared to people who live in rural areas. Spending time in nature, aka connecting with nature, also benefits brain function. Another study found that time in nature also offers positive effects on aspects of cognitive function, including working memory. So you want your brain to work better? Get out in nature. And yet, what are we all doing by and large? By and large, collectively, we're sitting on our computers, typing and texting. We're staring at screens by ourselves. We're not with other people. We're not out in nature. We're by ourselves on a screen. Now, let's talk about mental health for a minute. I know mental health, it's a complex topic, and someone's mental health or lack thereof, it's certainly impacted by a multitude of factors. I do not mean to say that if you suffer from depression or anxiety, all you have to do is go walk in the woods and you'll be cured. That's not what I'm saying. I am saying that nature could help. That's what the science suggests, at least. So why is this not talked about more? Is it because a walk in the woods is not easily monetizable? It's certainly not as monetizable as a little blue pill, right? It's not a pharmaceutical. So what I'm trying to say here is when we're disconnected from people, from nature, from anything, when we're disconnected from anything, it's hard to care. And if we don't care, we're not going to go out of our way to help. If you've listened to my episodes on biodiversity before, you already know that every species on this planet depends on other species for survival. When we mess with the populations of one species, what we're really doing is we're messing with the whole web. If we take sharks out of the food chain, it will have a cascading effect on all other marine species, which in turn will have effects on land species, right? Every single living thing matters in our delicate ecosystem. And so the disconnection I'm talking about, it's related, it's similar. When we don't see ourselves as part of an intricate web of life, it's hard to care. And so communal care is about moving through the world and making choices with an awareness of your interconnectedness to the planet and every single person and thing that also is on this planet. It's about knowing that our own health and wellness is dependent. Yes, it depends on, listeners, it depends on the health and wellness of our families, of our neighbors, of our communities, of our nations, of our planet. We can only tackle, because we will only have the zeal and passion to tackle the big five, when we care. Because guess what? You already know it's true. Changing your eating habits, perhaps drastically changing your eating habits, is hard. Vacationing less, staying closer to home, dealing with your heating and cooling issues, stopping spending money on junk, all of that, changing your habits, takes significant sacrifice. And sacrifice is only going to come naturally when we have skin in the game. Giving up our cushy lifestyles at worst, or significantly pivoting at best, we're only going to do all of that if we care. And we're only going to care if we reconnect. And how do we reconnect? Let's bring it back to that thesis statement, my friends. Yep. We reconnect when we start caring for other people and things through, say it with me, communal care. Now, this is the opposite of what I often say on the show, which of course is focus less on the external world, right? Tune out the noise, disconnect and go inward. I literally published an episode last week titled Disconnecting, right? So I want to make sure I clarify that what we're connecting to matters. So ask yourself, what are you connecting to? Are you connecting to marketing messages? Are you connecting to societal pressures to conform by buying some new hot commodity? That's not the connection I'm talking about. I'm not suggesting you connect to noise. I'm suggesting you consider a deeper level of care and connection that lies outside the realm of capitalism. I'm talking about going deeper and supporting the humanity of other people and seeing the beauty of the natural world that we largely, when we're sitting in our basements on our computers, take for granted. Caring for others is a powerful way to care for the planet. So how do you do it? I think I've made my point. I think I've supported my thesis. So how? How do we do it? How can you practice communal care this Earth Day, this Earth Month, every single day for the rest of your life? Well, it's easy. It's so easy. Look for places where you can help while simultaneously asking for help when you need it. When you ask for help and get it, the people who helped you will be more willing to ask you to reciprocate the next time they need a little bit of assistance. You know it's true, right? Just as convenience culture and social isolation work within a feedback loop, as we talked about before, guess what else works within a feedback loop, albeit a positive one? It, of course, is when we are in the habit of asking for help and getting it, the people in our lives will then ask us for help and get it. Positive feedback loop as opposed to a negative one. I must say, I am the most rugged individualist you've likely ever met. I traditionally do not feel comfortable asking for help. I take it all on my shoulders and then am resentful to everybody because they didn't notice that I was struggling. Yeah, that's my MO. I'll be honest with that. But I am working on my Achilles heel. For all the reasons I've outlined today, I'm working on asking for help when I need it. I'm also working on trying to offer unsolicited help more because I recognize that in our individualistic culture, other people also similarly, they've been conditioned to not ask for help. So I'm trying to offer unsolicited help more. I often do feel like, oh, I don't want to overstep, like boundaries. People like their privacy. But if I see a potential need, or a better way of saying that is to say that if I see an opportunity to help someone, I'm going to offer my help and I'm going to keep offering it even when I'm politely rejected. It's not a one and done thing. It's an always thing. So if you're on board and you're ready to practice more communal care, it's as simple as looking for places where you can help while simultaneously asking for help when you need it. The Enneagram 2s who are listening, if you know your Enneagram, you know all about the Enneagram. The Enneagram 2s are the helpers. They are doing this. They are actively going outside into their communities, their friend groups, their families, and they are providing help even when they're not asked for it. So you Enneagram 2s keep doing what you're doing. But for everybody else, we've got to work at it. Especially since our individualistic culture is telling us to just do it all ourselves. No, no, no. The answer is communal care. And so my final word for you today is yes, certainly. It's about transitioning from a self-serving, more individualistic self-care model to a more community-serving and planet-serving one. Yes, and that's only going to happen if we're all on board with practicing more communal care. But switching from an individualist worldview to a collectivist one, it's, yes, all about caring for others outside yourself. But ironically, that is the most individually beneficial thing you can do. Because remember, we're all connected. And so when you're caring for others, you're also caring for yourself. If we can remember this one thing on Earth Day and always, it's that our planet, it's not this nameless, faceless, shapeless entity that lies somewhere out there. It's our home. And when we care for it, when we care for others, other people, other animals, other things that call this planet their home, we're also, because remember, we're all connected, we're also practicing self-care, we're also caring for ourselves. So that's our show today. If you, of course, find yourself thinking about what you hear on this show, talking about what you hear on this show with others, perhaps you're even, after hearing my little five-paragraph essay today, perhaps you're thinking about the world a little bit differently. If any of that is true, please consider supporting the show. You can do that on Apple Podcasts. There's a little ad-free button. You can click it, and that will bring you to a special feed with ad-free episodes, extended episodes. You never have to hear an ad on this show again. Amazing. You can also join via the Substack link in this week's show notes. You'll get into book club and you'll be keeping the show running, essentially. You'll be keeping the lights on. So thank you for considering. There will be no headlines episode tomorrow. My daughters are on their school vacation, and I've had a rough week trying to be a great parent and a great podcast host. The two have not worked really well for me this week. I'm frazzled and stressed. So I'm canceling headlines tomorrow, but we will be back next week. We're going to be back Wednesday, not Tuesday. There was a scheduling conflict with the interview. Wednesday of next week, we will have an interview, and we're discussing the latest research into the impacts of pesticides on human health, not planet health. Human health. So what does the latest research say about pesticides? That's Wednesday's episode. I must say, this is one of those, in my opinion, must-listen episodes. Hugely important information for your life, your health, your family's health. So stay tuned for that. Again, that's Wednesday, not Tuesday. I will see you then. You can always reach out to me. I'm here for you. Happy Earth Day, and take care.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.